The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Oh, welcome back. We're all back to work because nobody won the lottery. How's that? All right, we were just talking about this during the break. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. It's all about this program. You're tuned into the one TV, oh, and by the way, radio program that gives you the strategies you need and the one that offers, in my opinion, that's right, the best money advice around. And my opinion's always right. We're here for you every day right here at the same time. We're going to be getting this hour into the topic of estate planning. It's good to think about this time of year and why it's important to have an estate plan. All right, whether you think you may need one or not. And maybe you don't. This is true. But we're going to cover the basic tools of an effective estate plan, what you should include, and what your main goal should be in setting up one of these estate plans. That's all just ahead. That's coming up and more with me, Johnny Dean, and Professor Rick Plum. You got a question for the Brain Trust? Of course you do. Everybody has money questions. You give us a call right now at our studio number, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We got some lines open right now. The show is just getting underway. Emails, yeah, we're going to get to those as well. You get to send those to us at wealthed.com, our website. You just click on the Find Your Answer link there near the top of the page. We got it here in the studio. Now, this professor dude, he's our own Rick Plum, our main Brain Trust advisor. He's here courtesy of the wonderful people, and I mean that, the wonderful people at Lucia Capital Group. We thank them for bringing us this hour of the show. If you need a buckets plan put together specifically for you, one that fits your goals, you call Professor or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group at that number right here, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. You know, preparing yourself for whatever might happen, that's one of the keys to a successful retirement plan. You have to make sure you have a plan for whatever might happen down the line. We're going to be talking about estate planning right now. Perfect example. So again, the number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. On the air, again, 877-PLANNER. Write it down. You know that by now. 877-752-6637. We do have lines open here at the top of the show. All right, estate planning. You know, a lot of people don't think about this. This is just one of those things. Maybe they do as they start to, as their parents start to die. Yeah. Yes, as they get older and die. And we experience this. And we see what sort of problems that we have, perhaps, in what should be the orderly transfer of assets, the effective, I guess, transfer of assets when you die. Many people run into problems.
Right. Well, obviously, the estate plan is really more for the people you leave behind than for yourself.
Yeah.
Because by the time your estate plan takes over, you're not really caring about that many things anymore. You're gone.
You yourself. Yes.
But it does create a lot of peace of mind before that day comes, knowing that your family is not going to be, you know, saddled with unnecessary expenses, unnecessary publicity of your estate, unnecessary infighting potentially between different members of the family or different members of your extended family. So it can create some peace of mind before you go. And that's part of one of the reasons why a lot of people will do estate planning. Obviously, creating an efficient use of money, a transfer of money after you're gone, really does help those that are left. And it that really makes them feel a lot better. But it can also make you feel a lot better before that day it happens, just because you know that it's taken care of. And unfortunately, a lot of people may think they've had it taken care of, but they have misunderstanding what actually happens, you know, when they pass on. They think that a will handles everything, makes it clean, makes it efficient, and it makes it, and it's always going to happen according to the will.
Yeah, people who write down their wishes, you know, on the back of a cardboard box or something like
napkin.
You've seen those things where somebody writes it out and says, "This is."
I've heard
this
of
is
those.
My will.
Never actually seen one.
No, no, but yeah, I mean, you find, you know, Uncle Charlie's will written on a, you know, in invisible ink or something.
A bar,
you know,
napkin,
something.
Exactly. Most likely.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, how it goes. But the problem with a will is that it's subject to some interpretation by the courts. I mean, it is up to the courts to prove of the will. It's fairly easily contested if you have the, I mean, you can say, hey, look, he really didn't mean that, and he was coerced into doing that. I mean, it's on a napkin from a bar. He was drunk when he did it. Come on. And the other problem with a will is that anybody who wants to know what's in the estate that goes through the probate process, it's open to public. You can just go down to the courthouse, go down to where the records are kept, and say, okay, is this estate worth my time going after and causing a fuss and making people upset? You know, like the black sheep brother or sister that comes back and says, dang, Dad had more than I thought. I want my piece of that.
So what you're saying is if an estate goes through probate because mm-hmm. they didn't have a living trust or whatever, they didn't have a will,
beneficiaries.
If they died intestate or whatever it is.
Either way.
You can
Well, a will will go through probate. So just having
absolutely.
A will.
No, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But you can, as a matter of public record, can you go back 30 years and find...
Yeah, it's all there.
It's all as part of a public
record. Now, it'd be difficult to go back 30 years and then raise a ruckus today. They'd be saying,
No. But if you want
to... Yeah,
you
can go back to even estates that are, you know, supposedly closed.
Yeah.
And you see some of the bigger the estate, the more likely it's going to have problems this way. We've heard about disasters in the estate planning area, like John Wayne's estate and some others, where it took decades to figure out who was supposed to get the money. But it was a fairly large estate to begin with, so there was a lot of people fighting for it. If you don't have anything, then how much of an estate plan do you really need? Well, it depends on what you do have and how much you care about that and or the people around you to be able to get it. And are there other ways to help you transfer those assets to them without dealing with the probate, without dealing with the cost, the complexity, the publicity of the courts?
All right. So, by the way, 877-PLANNER, if you have a question on this or anything else, doesn't matter. Lines are open, 877-752-6637. Brain Trust ready to answer your money questions. Okay, so talk for a second about some of the basic tools of an effective estate plan. You've got, you mentioned a will.
The will is the most basic one.
Yeah.
And for younger families, I think the will, no matter what it is, the will is important. I don't want to downplay that side of it. It's just that, unfortunately, a lot of people think it's the end-all, be-all of all estate planning documents. No, it's a starting document. And for especially people with younger families, a will is very important because it does something that no other document does. It sets the guardian for the kids, and that's important. I mean, who's going to raise the kids? You may have a family fighting over it. Maybe the in-laws, you know, husband and wife with small kids, you know, finally get a night out on their own.
Yeah.
They get a babysitter and they go out and a drunk driver finds them. Well, his parents think that her parents don't know how to raise kids or vice versa. And so they're fighting the two, you know, grandparents, you know, two sets of grandparents.
Sure.
And maybe there's more than two sets of grandparents because there was a divorce over here.
There's a third marriage or second marriage, whatever.
And so they're all fighting. And then the brothers and sisters from each side come in. No, I should be the one raising her, you know, or no, I don't want to. So... these are issues. Setting the guardian is one of the primary reasons for a will, and it's very important. But it's also difficult because there's times when you go through and you say, you know what, our family shouldn't really, we somehow survived, but our family should not be raising any more kids. I mean, let's be honest.
Sure.
Anyway, so you have to find a guardian that you know, feel would be appropriate to raise your kids because, unfortunately, you're not here to finish the job that you started off with. And so, but that is a very important part, and the will does that for you.
So that's what a young family should, that's why a young family should at least consider a will.
Oh, yes.
Should have one. Let's put
should
it that
have
way.
One, yes. And then the next step up, I mean, you're looking at beneficiary assignments. And the problem with, you know, that's a very good, effective transfer of assets because a beneficiary pretty much trumps anything else. No matter what the will says, if the beneficiary says, the designation says something else, it's going to go to that beneficiary. Again, it works very well to transfer assets. No publicity in that because it automatically goes to the beneficiary. But again, if you have younger children and you have life insurance, who's going to manage the money for them while they're under the age of 18? And without you there to raise them, do you want them receiving a large sum of money when they do turn age 18? Whatever's left in the estate goes to them without anybody looking over their shoulder. And so, you know, just having a beneficiary saying, well, it goes to my surviving spouse, but unfortunately she and I were, you know, killed in the car wreck together, and now it goes to our kids. Even if we've set the beneficiary up correctly, who's going to hold on to and manage the money for them? A guardian? Yeah, and that becomes a little bit problematic for some people. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't name a contingent beneficiary, especially for life insurance. And so you and your it's supposed to go to my wife when I die, but unfortunately, she was with me when the car accident happened, and there's no other beneficiary listed. She's not alive to accept the money. Where's the money go? Well, now it goes into probate. Goes into you just died intestate, basically, because you didn't have a will. And whoever's going to get it, whoever's going to then fight to get the kids, and then they're going to fight to get the money, are going to have to go to the courts. First off, they're going to fight with each other to find out who's going to control all of this money.
And that fight's never going to end, by the way.
And then they're going to have to go to court to prove that they're the ones that won the fight and that they're the ones that should be getting it done. So lots of things happen, especially when you have younger families. Now, death with younger families is not as likely as obviously in older ages, but it does happen, and it can really mess up not only the emotional life of somebody, but the financial life.
Well, you mentioned with a younger family, I mean, you know, it could happen. Car accident, something happens. They're both together, as you said. You know, if it's only one, it's not a good situation. But at least from a succession standpoint, if you're married, you've got
your successor's legal, already been picked.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And you picked them.
Yeah. The day you got married. So there are other things to consider. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about how life insurance can fit in all of this, because it can, especially with other marriages, other kids, divorces, all that stuff, and businesses as well, if you're a business owner. So we're going to be talking about this. 877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Lines are open right now. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, your money questions answered right here on Buckett Strategy Invest. It is Buckett Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. We got some lines open right now, 877-752-6637. If you want to get on board, do so. Jump the gun, get in before anybody else. I want to remind you, too, we're not really jumping the gun here, but there's a workshop or two, in fact, several, happening, and they're going to start in February. I want to remind you of those. Just write them down quickly. If you happen to be in, I believe the first one is in Las Vegas. Yes? February 20th, Saturday morning, 9 o'clock in Las Vegas. Get all the details at wealthed.com or just give us a call right here. You can sign up. They're all free. It's the 2016 already Retirement Income Strategies Workshop. So you got Las Vegas on the 20th of February, Seattle on February 27th, and then Phoenix, Arizona, Saturday, March 12th. So three Saturdays already. There are going to be a bunch more coming up between the middle of February and I think the middle of April, or the end of April, something like that. Be ready for that. Check local listings at or wealthed.com, whichever you prefer, and find out where and when we're going to be around. Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, joining you on the road. So,
there won't be one in the very middle of April, though, because that's tax weekend, and we're going to let everybody have some time off there.
You mean just some time to think about what it is?
Yes.
Yeah.
And because I'm not going to be available, but that's a different issue.
Oh, that's why. I wonder. There's a little gap in there somewhere. Yes. Yeah. Okay, well, again, if you have any questions on that, you can give us a call. Meet the Brain Trust, once again, wealthed.com, or give us a call, 800-644-1150. That's the number at Lucia Capital Group. And they're the ones who are sending these guys out and about. Always fun to meet listeners and viewers and all that and get their questions answered. Speaking of answering questions, we were talking about estate planning and all that stuff. You know, you mentioned life insurance. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, life insurance can play an important role in an effective estate plan.
Well, we were talking about young families, and life insurance has many different types of uses. It can be used in a lot of different ways, but it is one of those things that is very important for a young family. Unfortunately, from time to time, we see a family where they're doing well financially. They've got the nice house, although with a decent sized mortgage, the nice cars, and you know, it may be that even one of the spouses stays home or does a lot less work, so mm-hmm. they can raise the kids. Everything looks great on the surface. They're able to enjoy life. They can make their bills. They even may have a few toys here or there or travel here and there. And it looks like they're doing really well. And unfortunately, we've seen it too many times where the breadwinner is killed for whatever reason, dies because of an illness, unexpected, or is in an accident and passes away. And you find out that they did not do any type of planning. And they don't have any life insurance. And everything they have is loaned. They've got debts on every one of the cars. They've got a big mortgage. And without that ongoing income, the family, the surviving family, is in trouble. That's where life insurance is supposed to help out. Unfortunately, we see that as an expense a lot of people just don't like to do. Even though term insurance is very inexpensive, especially for young families, they don't buy the life insurance. And their family suffers because of it. Because they wanted to have that extra, what, $50, $100 a month, you know, to go spend somewhere else. And now their family, as I mentioned, maybe one of the spouses didn't have a very big job, and now they don't have the ways to pay for anything. The kids are having problems. I mean, life insurance is designed for one main reason. That first reason mm-hmm. is to provide for a family to continue on in the event that breadwinner or somebody who's making money isn't there to do it. Now, in my household, we had insurance when my wife was a pseudo stay-at-home mom. I say pseudo because she was never at home. She didn't bring a lot of financial support into the family, just a huge amount of emotional and well-being and everything that she does. But I had insurance on her because if something had happened to her, I would have had to cut back at work. I would have had to either hire somebody to do what she did. And
kind of expensive to do that.
Oh, it's, yeah. Or I would have had to change. We would have had to completely change everything in our lives because there was no way I could have worked in the number of hours I worked to be and still raised a family.
Yeah.
It's just so life insurance has a place. And one of the main places is to provide for families as they go along. But that also means who's the beneficiary? Do we just name the surviving spouse outright? Does that surviving spouse know how to handle money? Do we name somebody else as help? Typically, you're going to name the surviving spouse, but that's just, you have to start thinking about things like that.
Well, you do have to think about things like that, and here's where it also plays a part, and that has to do with blended families, which of course is...
Now we're getting a little bit older.
Yeah. You've got maybe kids from a second marriage. You have a new wife, perhaps a new or husband, whatever, the new spouse.
New spouse.
Let's say the new spouse happens to be quite a bit younger than the previous spouse. Sometimes the spouse is as young as...
Or maybe younger than the kids.
The kids.
So where it's when you have a traditional, the old style traditional family, it's one thing to leave it all to the surviving spouse, and then the kids will get it when the surviving spouse... passes away.
What if the new spouse
the spouse is the same age as
exactly.
The kids?
Exactly.
Do you really want your kids waiting that long or maybe never getting an inheritance from anything?
All right, so how do you solve that?
Well, life insurance is one of those things that it can provide a specific amount. I was talking with somebody the other day, and they have kids from a previous marriage. They got married a second time later in life, and they want to make sure they provide for their current spouse. I mean, obviously, they're committed to the current spouse. But they also want to make sure that their kids get something because they had an estate, they had an asset before they married this new individual. They want to make sure that the kids get something. So they have a choice. Do we want the kids to get the assets that are in the estate? Maybe there's a vacation house. Maybe there's certain assets that, you know, a family compound where everybody grew up and they want to keep that in the family. But that means that the surviving spouse isn't going to get anything. So maybe we buy the life insurance to provide for the surviving spouse going forward in case you die too soon. Or the other way around, maybe the assets aren't the important part, and we just want the kids to have something, you know, from mom or dad when they pass away, and you buy a life insurance policy. Give the entire estate to the new spouse, let them, you know, use that to take care of themselves, and buy a life insurance policy that guarantees a specific amount of money per child.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to get $250,000 each when I die. I got four kids, so I buy $1 million life insurance policy. Two kids, $500,000 life insurance policy. Or you pick your number. You know exactly what the kids are going to get at that point. And now there's no waiting for the new spouse who they may or may not even get along with. It's a complete separation of what's going on. They don't have to share. You know, it's not like they get the new spouse gets a life estate in the family house, and it'll ultimately go to the kids. But in the meantime, they got to deal with the surviving spouse that they may or may not get along with. So there's a lot of things where life insurance can be the great equalizer. Business is also one of those areas where life insurance can be the great equalizer. It can help remove a surviving spouse from one of the partners who didn't really have anything to do with the business from being in business. John and I are in business together. We're doing fine. His wife doesn't know that much about the business. My wife doesn't know that much about the business. Unfortunately, I get killed by a drunk driver. Now John, my share of the business goes to my wife. Now,
and who has maybe no knowledge and perhaps no interest whatsoever in running any of the business.
And if she could run it as well as I was running it to begin with, she probably would have been in business with me instead of John. So, you know, sorry, John. But she needs the business, the value of the business, to survive. So how do we make sure that she continues to get an income from a business that she can't add as much value to as I was in the way this hypothetical was created? Life insurance is a great way to do that. Buy out the business. Pay off the business, do whatever it takes, but just make sure that the family members are cared for in the manner that you want to deal with. Now, we weren't supposed to be talking about life insurance today, but
But I'm just, as part of an estate plan, and there's one other aspect too. Maybe you've got kids who don't, one of whom wants to run your business.
The others don't want anything to do with it.
And the others want nothing to do with it. So we'll try to talk about that living trust, and anything else. If you have any questions, doesn't have to be on estate planning, can be on any money question you have, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, we're coming right back. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. David Bowie was just 69 years old.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, man, just little bits of our youth slowly being chipped away. You know, I always wondered how the oldest person in the world feels. You know, whoever hits the old, you know, every single person that was alive when that person was born is dead. I just wonder, I mean, does that have a psychological effect on somebody?
Probably. I know that my grandfather was over 100 when he passed.
Yeah, and there are a lot of them like that. Just being over 100.
You know, before he passed, you know, you talk about things like,
right,
what do you want to have done when you pass away?
Yeah.
And he said, I don't know anybody. I mean, other than my immediate family, everybody my friends have gone long before me.
Exactly.
And so he goes, I don't want to have any, you know, just do what you want to do. Mm. I mean, there's no party, no memorial, because, you know, other than the immediate family,
it doesn't
matter.
So anyway, all these rock and rollers, I read, I think it was Jimmy Page, who's like 73 today or something. 73?
Okay.
Could that be right? Wow. Anyway. All right. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. I want to remind you now, coming up, we answer a lot of questions on the show. We're doing a little bit more on estate planning. We'll get to some of your emails as well. But one of the biggest topics is Social Security. And thus, we have a show for you specifically on Social Security. It's every Tuesday. It's at wealthed.com. It is, oddly enough, the Social Security show. That's right. We are clever. The Social Security show. It actually is. I don't know how many. I don't know. There may not be another one. We've got it. So at wealthed.com, that's where you go. Watch it online exclusively at wealthed.com, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern time, with me, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We talk about all aspects of Social Security, the laws, the strategies. We take your emails, take your phone calls. We do have quite a few of those. People leaving a voicemail at our hotline, we answer those questions on the show as well. So check it out, wealthed.com, the Social Security show, every Tuesday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern time. Okay, 877-PLANNER, yes?
And Jimmy Page turned 72 over the weekend.
Oh, 72?
Yes.
Okay. Well, all right, then. That's nothing. I thought if it was 73, then, yeah, man,
he's getting up there at 73.
The guy's got all white hair.
Yeah.
He looks like a banker now. He's wearing a suit and tie in the picture I saw.
Well, you got to figure he's maybe, hopefully, saved a little bit of the money that he made over those years, and now he's acting like a banker because he's got all the money that a bank was.
Was he one of the hotel room trashers, or was...
I don't know. I mean, they never invited me along with them, so I don't know which one actually trashed the room.
Okay. All right. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Okay, now, just wrapping up this idea of estate
planning.
Yeah, and we mentioned before the break, there are a couple of aspects to this. First, you've got a business, and you've been running it very well for many years. You got some kids. You're thinking about, you know, what's going to happen.
Your business succession plan, hopefully, is to pass it on to a kid. At least you're hoping that's the way. And one of your kids has shown that they want to be part of the business. But for a lot of business owners, the majority of their net worth is created by that business.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are like most parents, you kind of want to share and share alike between your kids. And if you have three kids, that's a third, a third, a third. But if your business is 50% or more of your entire net worth, how do you give it to one child and then still be, you know, third, a third, a third? Or how do you just automatically cut the other ones out of it? Or do you make them business partners in the business, even though they have no desire to run the business? They don't want to be there. And basically, you're putting them in partnership with the one child that actually knows what's going on. So in many cases where the business is the majority asset, this again is another place where life insurance can help equalize that estate. The two that are in my example, the two that are not in the business, get a certain amount of income from cash from the death benefit of the life insurance, and the other child gets the business, and they do with it as they need to do, hopefully. So it can work out very well in helping you make your estate either more liquid so that they can do things with it, equalize it, just make it simpler for a lot of people to settle.
I used to wonder about that, and that's just one of the things I thought of, because I've known some business owners. They've got some kids. One's really interested, as you said, in the business. Well, what do? You leave your entire estate to that kid, the other kids get cut out. The way to help mitigate that is through life insurance.
In many cases, yes.
Yeah, so there are uses for it. So we got a few more ideas for you. And one other thing we haven't talked about yet, which we'll get into shortly, is living trusts. And that's a big part of an estate plan, because a living trust can actually help, if done right, help elude or go around the probate process. You want to keep your assets, not only keep it private, but also not go through the very expensive probate process. That's one way to do it. All right, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Take a couple of calls. Back to the phone lines. Next up, Catherine. Hang on, Karen. Catherine in Beaumont, California. How can we help you today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an ethical question regarding a real estate transaction I'm in process with. I'm selling a rental property in the Sacramento area, and I'm asking $425,000. The buyer, potential buyer, wants new windows, which will cost about $6,000. I'm not willing to do that. So their agent is suggesting that we raise the sales price. I'm asking if this is fraudulent. He's suggesting that we raise the sales price to $431,000, and then I give him $6,000 extra in commission, and then he gives them the $6,000 to replace the windows. Is this ethical?
Well, there's no guarantee that he's going to give them the money.
That's what I said.
If you're going to raise the price, just fix the windows and raise the price. Have it done in the escrow. Put a slightly longer escrow and say, okay, it's now $431. It's part of the escrow, the closing of it. The windows have to be fixed, and that's the way it works. And so the realtor has nothing to do with any of that. That's just part of the give and take between you, the seller, and the buyer. Now, will the buyer even – I mean, if the buyer is going to say, sure, I'll pay $431 – instead of the $425, why don't they just fix the windows themselves? Pay $425 and fix the windows because they want to.
They don't have the money. This is a way to just kind of cook the books, I'm suspecting. They don't have the money. They barely have enough money to put a deposit on an FHA loan. That's the issue, and they're adamant that they want new windows. I don't want to do a remodel. I'm not in a position to want to even do that. But
you make sure you have a large enough non-refundable down payment in the escrow that if they back out or can't qualify at the end of it, you at least get your $6,000 plus back and put it in, okay, $431, and we will fix the windows. Here's the cost of doing it, and that's why we raised it from $425 to $431. That way they can qualify for the loan, hopefully. And if they don't, you fix the windows, but it didn't come out of your pocket if they back out at the wrong time.
So that just sounds like a liability and a project I'm not willing to take on.
Well, then,
and I told them.
Then you would say,
the realtor said, I'll just increase my commission and I'll let them handle it. I'll give them the $6,000 out of an increased commission.
But how is that different than raising it to $431 and fixing the windows in the escrow versus raising it to $431 and hoping the guy gives them the $6,000 to do it? The guy or girl, I don't know which your realtor does.
I don't want to take on a project.
I don't know what the actual legal aspects of that are, but it just sounds kind of fishy to me. Maybe it's done every day. I don't sell houses every day. It just sounds, I'd rather do it through the escrow than do it through the hope that the guy pays him back.
My accountant told me that it was fraud. It was fraud to the lender.
It does sound fishy to me.
It does, yes. He said you're asking the lender to finance a remodel, and that's not what the house purchase price is really $425, but you're upping it to $431. And that's fraudulent.
Well, I don't think that's the issue necessarily, because if somebody
wants,
you can
get any price you want.
You can ask anything you want, and if you have new windows in it, the price would be $431. That's not the issue. It's the issue of going through and saying, well, we're going to raise it to $431 without doing the windows, raise the commission, and then backdoor the money over to the person. That one, I think, is fraud. Doing it through the escrow, I don't think is fraud.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to clarify. That's my understanding as well, and I just wanted a verification of that.
Yeah. I think doing it the way that, with the commission, extra commission, because that is now the only reason we're doing it is to finance the other side of it without telling them that's what we're doing. But the other one, it's all in the escrow. It's all up front, and everything's kosher.
Well, okay, all right.
I mean, I've had people say, well, you have to fix the furnace, or you have to fix it, so it's money coming out.
Yeah, redo the deck or something like that.
At that point, I can't afford to sell the property, so, well, I'm not accepting your offer because, you know, you want me to do this, which is costing me money, and I can't afford to do that. And so if you want me to do that, then I have to charge you more for the house. And that doesn't seem fraud to me.
And I've seen where they adjust the price based on you give somebody a carpet allowance or, something if it needs to be replaced, and that's really the deal breaker.
Right, but you lower the price.
You lower the price in that.
Just like you're lowering the price as kind of a kickback or something in that.
You're raising the price.
It to make sure they fix it.
Yeah,
it's just one of those escrow requirements.
Yeah, if you do, where you lower the price, $10,000 because there's a huge, project in the backyard that needs to work, you give them an allowance. And over time, that actually is why you wind up financing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of how it is. So, Catherine, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Hey, we got some lines open. Call now. You have a money question, any money issue at all. We're here to answer the questions for you. Brain Trust standing by, Professor Rick Plum, Johnny Dean. Bucket Strategy Investing, our phone line open, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. We're coming right back with more right after this. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Another hour of this coming up. Next hour, we do this 2 hours in a row for your convenience and for ours. We're going to answer more of your questions. Emails, phone calls, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, emails, wealthed.com. We will cover that as best we can. Okay, back to the phone lines. Somebody had a comment. I think it was Chris on the last caller. So let's go to Chris up next in Dallas, Texas. Hi, Chris. I think. Is Chris there? Oh, is he gone? Okay. All right. Well, hold on, Chris. If you're there, we'll catch you in just a second. Then let's move along to Ira in Gig Harbor, Washington. That's it. Hello, Ira.
Hi there. How are you guys doing?
Very well. How are you?
Good. Real good.
So how can we help you today?
Well, I am. I've never bought a bond. I'm trying to understand the yield calculation on bonds. So, I see what's stated on some offerings. I'm looking at Washington State bond, and so this is what I understand: $1,000 bond pays 5%, or it has a 5% coupon. The cost, it says, is 112.86, and the yield stated is 2.971. So my understanding of that, and tell me where I'm messing up here, is that if you bought a $1,000 bond, it would cost you $112.86, which means that you're actually investing $871.40. So if I multiply that times 5%, I come out with $43.57.
Well, no, the 5%.
And if I divide that by 1,000, it looks like it's a 4.3% yield.
Well, there's different numbers that you're dealing with. There's yield, there's yield to maturity, and the yield, the cash flow that you're getting from the bond is always equal to, let's say it's a $100,000 bond, just for easy math.
Mm-hmm.
5%, the cash flow is going to be $5,000.
Right.
But to buy that bond today, if you can buy it today at a price of 112.8 or 0.86, you would have to pay $112,860 to buy that $100,000 bond. So a yield calculation is purely how much cash flow am I receiving from it on an annual basis divided by how much I paid for it. So from that standpoint, my yield is 4.43%. I'm receiving $5,000 of cash flow, a 5% coupon on a $100,000 bond, but I paid $112,000. My investment was $112,860.
Mm-hmm.
So 5% divided by $112,860 is 4.43. But what they're giving you on the piece of paper is what they call yield to maturity, my guess is.
Right, that's true.
And so it's probably maybe about a 6 or 8 year bond or so.
The 7 year, 2023.
I was pretty good on that, okay?
You were.
It's coming off the top of my head. Yeah.
And have you done this before?
I've read about it.
You need a life.
I think I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express, and that's why I can.
You need a life, Plum. This is ridiculous. We got to get you out more.
And what they're saying is that if you invest $112,860 today, and you receive $5,000 a year in cash flow for 7 years, and then receive the maturity of $100,000, my real rate of return on my initial investment of $112,860 is 2. Whatever you stated as the yield to maturity.
2.971.
The yield to maturity takes into consideration the premium that you're paying for it that you're not getting back when it matures, or on the other side, a discount that you were able to buy it at that you will enhance your return when you get it back at the end. Because it's taken into consideration that 12, almost 13% premium that you paid for this bond when you bought it. Does that make sense? So there's yield, which is a very simple calculation, cash flow divided by current price. Mm-hmm. And there's yield to maturity, which is taking into consideration the time value of money. You know, the money I get back in future years is less valuable than the money I get back today. It takes into consideration the differential between what I paid for the bond and what it matures for. One, I'm paying, you know, this bond is 112 versus receiving back 100. And so it takes into those types. I like looking at yield to maturity because it's a seven-year investment. Am I willing to invest my money in this particular bond to receive a just shy of 3% rate of return over the next 7 years? Am I willing to do that? And if I'm not willing to do that, then let's say it was a 10-year bond and I'm only getting 3% for 10 years, I'm not that worried. I'm not that excited about it. 3% tax-free, you're basically tax-free over the next 7 years. Okay, that's a little bit better. It'd be better if it was 3 years, but you're not getting that. That's why they don't price out that way. But it gives you the ability to look at time horizon and rate of return and make a corresponding adjustment as far as, am I willing to lock my money up for 7 years for a 3% rate of return, 2.97% rate of return?
So it gives you a little bit better, it gives you a little bit better idea of what the value of that bond is.
Right, but it is not a 5%, it is a 5% bond, but it is not a 5% investment to you.
Right. No, I understand that part of it. I wasn't clear how they came to that 2.97, and if all other things were equal on this, the same cost to purchase, and it was, let's say it was a, instead of a 7-year bond, it was a 10-year bond, am I understanding right that the yield to maturity would increase? Is that right?
It would be a little bit higher, yes.
Constant?
And you know, if you had 112 price and a 10 years to maturity, basically you're amortizing that 12% premium over 10 years instead of 7 years.
Right.
And so and that's an easy way to, it very simple, down and dirty, not exact way to calculate it, is look at the premium. It's 12%, almost 13, call it 13%, seven years left. So that's about 2% a year that you're giving back, a little under 2% a year that you're giving back on the price.
Oh, I see what you're doing, yeah. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
That's not exact. It tends to...
Right, but...
But it's a quick way to look at it. The real calculation, if you do not have a financial calculator, is insanity. You don't want to do that. You want a financial.
Oh, I looked that up. I don't want to do that.
No, you don't want to do that. Don't mess with that.
Yeah. But with a financial calculator, you can do it fairly easily. But not everybody has financial calculators. So down and dirty is, you just like, if it's a 10% premium and it's a 10-year bond, I'm losing about 1% a year. So it's actually a little less than 1% a year with compounding and things. So if I had a 5% bond, it'd be about a 4%. Yield to maturity, give or take. That's a very general way to look at it. And that's how I guessed it, what the yield to maturity, what the number of years left on the bond was.
He's not as smart as you think. It's a fairly good rule of thumb.
I don't know. I think he's as smart as I think.
I joke. I kid. You're right. Hey, Ira, if you have any other questions, hold on. I just got to take a quick break here for the top of the hour. So please, we can help you out if you need anything else. Stick around. We will talk to you here at the top of the hour. There's some room on the phones if you want to get in touch with the Brain Trust, 877-PLANNER. If you need the Brain Trust off the air and you want to talk to Professor Plum or any of the advisors about these particular issues or whatever issues you have, you call them at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. Stick around. Another hour just ahead of Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.